Well, this is Peter Ford. I had a long 35-year career in the Foreign Office. I ended up ambassador in Syria. Before that, I was ambassador in Bahrain. The Middle East is my special subject. I'm an Arabist. And after the Foreign Office, I worked for 8 years with the United Nations, with the agency UNRWA that's in Gaza now, in the thick of the fighting there. For the last few years, I've been an activist in the freedom movement, and more recently, I've joined the George Galloway's Workers' Party. Quick promotion, I've become deputy leader to George, and I'm now heavily engaged in the election campaign.
Now, the reason I've contacted you today, Peter, is to ask about these attacks, which have received a little bit of press coverage, but nothing, to my mind, like they should have done, on these early warning defence radars of the Russians. So we've got, within the last week, another two. So these, it's argued, aren't needed or relevant to the war in Ukraine, because they are... they have thousands of miles range, and they're basically pointed up into space looking for ballistic missiles coming from the NATO countries to nuclear ones to blow up Russia. So what do you make of these attacks?
Well, it looks like a miscalculation by Ukraine. They've been reckless. And according to the Daily Telegraph, some even in Washington are alarmed by this Ukrainian playing with fire, because, as you say, the targets are not involved, or not directly anyway, in the conflict in Ukraine. Now, the Ukrainians might say that they are just teaching Russia that the Ukrainians can inflict pain on Russia as well. And the result of these attacks is that Russia will probably have to do some costly reorganization of its nuclear defenses. Something of a heavy price is involved here for Russia. But whether it will induce Russia to change what it's doing in Ukraine must be very doubtful, and in fact the reverse may happen. Russia may decide that it needs to move even quicker to knock Ukraine out of the fight. I mean, you could ask whether some hotheads in the West have put the Ukrainians up to this. I wouldn't put it past the British. But I suspect that the calmer heads in Washington are not overly pleased about this. Messing with Russia's nuclear system, any aspect of Russia's nuclear system, is destabilizing for the world. And I don't think the Americans welcome that at the moment. But the Ukrainians have done this repeatedly now. It is alarming.
I wonder if those calmer heads in Washington really have any voice, though, because if you just look at the sort of target now, we keep getting these reports, and we've had very strange answers from many ministers over the last year or so about whether there are actually any British forces or other NATO forces in Ukraine. I think we can conclude it's likely that there may well be. And so the Russians are looking at this, aren't they, Peter, and thinking, well, actually, this is NATO doing this targeting. I mean, they're finding these targets, often using their satellites for the Ukrainians anyway. And this looks to us like a NATO operation. Maybe we should strike back at one of the NATO early warning radars, like Fylingdales, for example, in North Yorkshire.
I think the Russians are smarter than that. they will be assessing what's going on. Will be anxious not to fall into any kind of Ukrainian trap. They're probably aware that Ukraine may be pulling a kind of Samson act here, acting recklessly precisely to make the Russians overreact, and that will draw in NATO, because the Ukrainians are so desperate. They know that they can only survive if they drag NATO in to a much higher degree. So I think the Russians are smarter than that. They may huff and puff a bit, but they're not going to do anything reckless themselves.
Moving to the Middle East, where you were an ambassador, what do you make of the reaction to the International Court of Justice last week, and also, of course, the International Criminal Court issue these arrest warrants for Netanyahu, and there is actually and Gallant, the Defense Secretary for Israel, and there is actually a similar action taking place in London, where lawyers have requested the Scotland Yard investigate five government ministers. This is Tory cabinet ministers who have been supporting this genocide in Gaza. So quite a lot was going on the legal front last week. What do you make of it all?
Lawfare is not going to make any difference, is the short answer. It's welcome that parts of the international system are actually working as they were designed to, and have not been thwarted by the major powers. The ICJ and the ICC have done what they're supposed to do, which is to call out and attempt to make evil people responsible. But the Israelis are showing with their actions just over the last 72 hours that they're showing two fingers to the practitioners of lawfare, to well-meaning people in the West who pin any hopes on the ICJ and the ICC. As long as the Israelis have American support, and they do, of course, they can act with impunity. That is exactly what they are doing, and what they're showing they can do. They're showing complete defiance. What they've done just in the last 48 hours is to engage in a major ground in incursion. Everybody over the last few weeks has been wagging their fingers at them, saying you mustn't do that. And that is precisely what they are doing. And what is the Western world doing? Just tutting and say, oh, isn't that a shame? In the end, it all comes down to military action. And I believe that Hamas are going to be able to withstand what the Israelis are doing in Rafah, just as they have withstood the earlier operations in the center, Khan Yunis, and in the north, where we're seeing Hamas commandos popping up, regularly killing Israeli soldiers. And within days, if not weeks, it will be clear that the Israeli operation in Rafah has been no more successful than the earlier operations elsewhere in Gaza, and the Israelis will be left in a situation where they haven't got their hostages back, and they're unable to stop Hamas sending rockets or carrying out commando actions. At some point, the Israelis, especially with domestic pressure, are just going to withdraw and do a deal for the hostages.
Most of our MPs are actually lawyers. Surely they can see that international law means something, and that if there is an arrest warrant put out for those genocidalists in the Israeli government and the Israeli Defence Force, then these international laws do have repercussions. Britain is signed up to these various treaties, and it may be that the law will come for some of these MPs too. So surely this may have played a role in the calling of the general election, the idea being to get a bunch of clean skins from the Labour Friends of Israel into power.
That's fanciful, I think, Tony. It's an interesting theory, but there's a lot more going on in the calling of the election. The fact is that we're still probably months away from any arrest warrants being issued for Netanyahu and Gallant. The ICC judges now have to ponder. They're not likely to do it in a rush. And at that point, when they do, then it will become probably unthinkable for those two people to visit London. If they were so stupid, then they would be arrested. That's not going to happen. And it's fanciful to think that people like British MPs who've been supporting Israel could also be the subject of arrest warrants. We're very, very far from that.
Okay,
it's a nice thought in our dreams.
What's your theory and the thinking in the Workers' Party about why Sunak has called the election when he did? It seems very peculiar because if he wanted to win, surely you would wait for some of his policies to come to fruition by the end of the year, or at least to cling on to power. So why do you think that the election was called so early?
Well, it's obvious, isn't it, that the Rochdale factor. I'm being a bit facetious, but I think one of the factors is that Sunak has reckoned that it's the Gaza factor is going to work for him in that it will undermine Labour, and the Workers' Party and many independent candidates are going to make inroads into the Labour vote. Whereas if he hangs on for 6 months, well, probably Gaza will be receding in the rearview mirror, and the Workers' Party and others will do less well. And so it made sense from that point of view to go early. But of course, economic factors are also in play. He's just had some relatively good news on the inflation front. Things are not going to get better. But I do think that the Gaza factor has been a consideration, and it will affect at least 50 constituencies where Labour either have vulnerable sitting MPs, including people like Angela Rayner in Ashton-under-Lyne, and a number in marginal constituencies where Labour were counting on winning, and we may be able to prevent that from happening.
Well, what would you say to those that will say, well, there's really no point in the first-past-the-post system in voting for one of these minor parties like your party, the Workers' Party, or Reform?
Well, the first answer is that you should vote with your conscience. Vote for the party that your heart tells you to vote for. It's your duty to yourself, to be honest with yourself. But hang on.
Most people understand, in under first past the post, you have to vote tactically.
No, because in every election, only a minority of people get what they want. I've voted a dozen times, and I've never got the candidate I wanted. That's democracy. That's the way it works, Tony. The majority of people will not get what they wanted. And that's not even counting the people who can't be asked to vote anyway. But perhaps the more relevant point is that people have a chance here not to put the Workers' Party in power. We're not stupid. We're not angling to be put in power, at least not this time round, but to teach others a lesson, to teach the government a lesson, to teach Labour a lesson. And that will then create a platform for the next election 5 years down the track for the Workers' Party and perhaps the Greens and others to the opposition.
Yeah, but if you vote for the Workers' Party rather than Labour, you might actually just simply end up with the Tories taking the seat.
Bring it on. That's what we're hoping. Bring it on. Our mission as the Workers' Party is to destroy the fake Labour Party. They are behaving very badly. I hesitate to use a bad word, but they're behaving very badly towards the working class. Yeah. They're not respectful of working class. In fact, working class. They are the middle class metropolitan party. They are the Conservatives' light. They deserve to be taken down. That is our aim.
Yeah. What do you make of what's happened to Diane Abbott? Because it's very strange. This report was completed in December, but they've waited just until the point
It's shameful.
She's just about to decide whether to stand against Labour. And they've said, yes, you can come back into the party, but we don't want you as our MP. I mean, this does smack of extreme control freakery from this current Labour Party and by Keir Starmer, that they basically are telling all of these constituencies around the country, we want to decide who is going to be the MP for this area, and the members don't really get a say.
It's shameful the way they've treated Diane, utterly disgraceful, shameful. Loyal stalwart of the party, first black woman to be iconic figurehead for Labour, being put out to grass ignobly. It's shocking. I hope the voters of Hackney North and Stoke Newington register a protest vote to show they're not happy about that.
What about the Workers' Party? Are you ready for the election, or were you caught on the hop?
Well, like everyone, we were surprised it was called so early, but surprise quickly gave way to hope, because as I mentioned before, the Gaza factor is hot. It's helping us. We would have been more worried to be running later in the year when Gaza may have faded. So it works in our favor. Mechanically, this is a problem. We're a young party. We have no money. it's difficult to get up and running, but we're getting there, and we fully expect to have several hundred candidates for people to vote for all over the country, even in unlikely places like the South West and Wales.
Okay, Peter Ford, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.